Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for a Rivalry Radio exclusive. It's the Flip Side with Mike and Rick. The Flip Side with Mike and Rich. It's game time, Mike and Rich. So do your thing.
That was yesterday with the Giants taking the win over the New York Mets. Juris Familia going down with a shoulder injury today. Who knows how long the Mets will be without him. That is the intro today for our new show. I am Mark Kelly, and this is the MLB 17 Power Hour. We'll be joined shortly by Lenny Melnick, who you can find at LennyMelnickFantasy.com, and he has a show on Sirius XM Radio. And just a couple other things to do with MLB so far today. For the Mets, that is a big, big loss because Familia was somebody who, when the season started, you saw clearly what they were without him in their bullpen. And if they're without him for a period of time, which it looks like he will, as he has a shoulder issue, he has a blood clot in his shoulder, and God knows how long those things can clear. And he's got to be looked at tomorrow by a doctor that had looked at Matt Harvey and gave him his thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. So who knows how long he will be out. But that was the audio from yesterday's Mets-Giants game. And as we continue to start the show here, I'm going to bring in Lenny Melnick now. Lenny, how are you doing today?
Well, let's put it this way. I've been a Met fan since 1962, when Jay Hook beat the Pittsburgh Pirates by the score of 9-1 for their first win, and I'm just about ready to pack it in this year. I'll tell you that. I've never seen, I'm serious. I've never seen a team with such calamity, so disconnected. Like the New York Mets, it really makes me ill. So I don't know. I have a feeling this is going to be. It's only getting worse. Absolutely.
Well, let's start with that, okay? Because it seems like year after year the Mets are dealing with these injuries, and it's always the same type of injuries: arm injuries, hamstring pulls, shoulder pulls, lat pulls. It just never seems to end. Ray Ramirez has been on their staff since 2004. And it just seems year after year the Mets are bombarded with these types of injuries where they play some games with 20 players because they're injured, but they're not injured enough to go on the DL. And it's like a never-ending scenario with Collins and Ramirez, and it just keeps going on and on. I mean, how many games do you see the Mets with one or two guys that they can use for pinch hitters because the rest of them are recovering or they have a slight injury? I mean, how many times has that happened in the last couple of years? Why does that continue to happen? What, now that you have a 7-day DL and a 10-day DL, what is the problem with putting some of these guys on a disabled list when they can't play?
Well, the Mets are still, you know, they don't feel the season has started yet, so they're not taking it seriously until David Wright joins the squad and plays third base and bats cleanup. Yeah, that's good. You know, this goes, it's really more than the Mets. It's the Mets. I can go back, I don't even know what year, but I remember an outfielder named Ryan Church who was diagnosed with a concussion And the Mets immediately put him on a plane for a road trip to California, and they didn't realize how dangerous that could be, putting a concussed individual on an airplane. And it just goes on and on with the Mets. But this year, I think, is worse than ever, because it's not just the injuries. I can't tell you. It's the medical staff. It's the trainers. It's their workout habits. I don't know. But what I do know is that there's a disconnect. It starts with Steven Matz, who claims that his elbow was bothering him. The Met doctors say, after examining him, there's nothing wrong. Nothing wrong. So he gets a second opinion, and his second opinion says there is something wrong. Then you have Noah Syndergaard. They ask Noah Syndergaard to take an MRI, and he says no. Well, how do you say no? If the pitcher says no to an MRI, you automatically put him on the DL. That's like insubordination. The Mets have made a big investment in Noah Syndergaard, and for him not to say no, that's like going up to a player and say, oh, look, we got to take a drug test for it. No, I'm not doing it. Not today. How about next week when I'm clean? And then, of course, you got what really drives me nuts is the Matt Harvey thing. And I'm not talking about the incident. I'm talking about the fact that Matt Harvey has had thoracic outlet syndrome.
Outlet syndrome.
That's
right.
What he has in this. And, you know, it kind of ended Josh Beckett's career. It ended Chris Carpenter's career. It ended a lot of careers. And you even take a look. In the off season, the Washington Nationals made a big run for Tyson Ross because their depth at starting pitching was absolutely non-existent. And Tyson Ross's brother pitches for Washington. And Tyson Ross decided not to go to Washington. He went to Texas because of their experience with thoracic outlet syndrome. And Tyson Ross is not pitching yet. And we all, as Met fans, are led to believe that Matt Harvey should be throwing 95, 97, 120, you know, and he probably shouldn't even be pitching yet. But yet they put him out there. So between the Syndergaard and the Mats, and the Harvey situation, I got to tell you, it's not just the injuries; it's the total disconnect between. And why is David Wright still taking up a spot? I know he's on the 60-day DL, but why? I mean, I know why. Because they don't want to retire David Wright out of respect. They want David Wright to say, you know, something, I can't do it anymore. Let him make the decision, and that's pretty nice. But come on, Mets, it's time to wake up and play the game.
Well, I mean, what is the deal with Wright? I mean, you hear that he's trying to rehab. You hear that.
No,
you know,
he's not. He can't play. He can't play. They just don't want to look bad by retiring him. They want David Wright to say, hey, look, the Mets have been very patient, but I realize now I can't do it. Let it be his decision. And that's what they're doing. Sorry. I just get all bent out of shape here.
No, I hear you. But you never would hear them say that. I mean, when you hear updates on David Wright on broadcast, it's always about how he's getting prepared. He's going to go down to Florida. He's going to go through rehab. His issues, his neck issue, which really is the big thing, mm-hmm. you know, because he can't throw anymore. But you don't hear that his career is over when everyone knows that, you know, you just said it. This guy is not coming back. And even when he did play, you know, at the end of the 2015 season, when he came back, his first at bat against Philadelphia, hits the home run, you know, he has gets a big hit against the Dodgers in game one of that series. Then he doesn't get another hit for the rest of the series. You know, he hits a home run in the World Series in game three. He played okay, but this wasn't the guy who was hitting 30 home runs, driving in 100 runs and hitting over 300 like he did for three of his first 4 years, you know, in Queens. So,
right.
He obviously had really slipped. And when you see a guy like Ryan Zimmerman, who, you know, the two of them were always brought up with each other. And if you look at the first couple years of their career, Wright had a big advantage over him. And now you look at what Zimmerman, you know, after a couple off years, you look at what Zimmerman's doing this year. You know, he leads the NL in all the triple crown categories, hitting over 390. He has over 34 RBIs. He has 13 home runs. Looks like a totally different player. And you wonder, why couldn't this be Wright? What exactly happened in his career that, you know, outside of his injuries? I guess injuries happen, but even before he had those injuries, he was starting to slip a little bit. And
yeah,
it just you look at the history of the Mets, they don't have very good position players. You know, if you look at their history leaders for home runs, RBIs, batting averages, I mean, for a long time, I still think Bernard Gilkey is the leader for most doubles in a season. So you know, it just goes to tell you how bad this Mets team is.
Well, what about Alex Escobar and Alex Ochoa? Come on.
Yeah.
Let's wait. You know, those guys are due, right?
Yeah. And
about 10 years ago,
a handful of other prospects.
They would do.
Yeah, going all the way back to Sean Abner, if you want to.
Good one. And
yeah.
Steve Chilcott over Reggie Jackson. So it never,
yeah.
It's just on and on and on and on. So
you're right. It never ends.
I forgot about one. Oh, I forgot one. Cool. How about at the beginning of the year when they're thinking about starting Zach Wheeler in extended spring training or maybe even in AAA and Zach Wheeler or maybe even in the bullpen so that they could bring him along slowly and then use Zach Wheeler in full strength in the second half. And Zach Wheeler says, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to the bullpen. I'm not going to the minors. I'm a starter. That's what he said. And believe it or not, the Mets said, okay. And they're starting Zach Wheeler, who's pitching. He's not pitching great. He's some good, some bad. But even if he pitches good, this is another Steven Strasburg. They're going to shut him down when they need him during the stretch run. Doesn't make
120
any sense.
Innings. I believe they said 120 innings was the limit for him, and
they
he's
don't
about
even
halfway
know.
There
Are you
already.
Me?
So, but it doesn't matter because they don't stick to what they say anyway. So they could tell you one thing and then they'll do another thing. So it doesn't matter with the Mets. And I mean, we can go on and on about the Mets, but this, you know, I really don't want it to be a complaining show about the Mets, even though we can't.
No.
I want to look at let's look at some like. Good things in Major League Baseball as we go around.
I want you to know, I dated Miss Rheingold, so I'm a big Met fan, okay? But nobody knows who Miss Rheingold is. It doesn't matter.
Well,
but it was a big contest in New York. Yeah.
Yes, it has to do with the beer, I believe. Rheingold beer, right?
Yes. They had the contest, yeah. Miss Rheingold. It was all over the place. But anyway, what's next for
I appreciate the nostalgia, Lenny. I'm one of the few guys.
Thank you very much.
Go forward with it. But you look yeah. at the rest of the National League. Okay, let's stay in the National League East. The Nationals look like they're going to run away with the division. Bryce Harper is doing what he did a couple years ago, where he has numbers, you know, leads the league in runs, he leads the league in OPS. He's just having an incredible year like he did a couple years ago. Clearly one of the best players in baseball. Daniel Murphy is still hitting. The Nationals lead the major leagues in batting average. And they're still getting strong starting pitching. Their problem is the bullpen, but they're not really going to have to worry about anything if the Mets don't start to get their act together. And with all the injuries they're dealing with, I don't think that'll happen. So, I mean, how serious are the Nationals about fixing their bullpen when they're already 5.5 games up in the National League East?
Well, serious, I take the position that Sean Kelly's coming back, Cody Glover's coming back. I know. And listening to Mike Rizzo this morning with Craig Mish and on his show, that Rizzo says, no, we haven't talked to Kelvin Herrera. We haven't talked to anybody. We're going to go from within. I'm thinking that Blake Treinen is going to get another shot because they had him a couple of years ago. They decided, let's make him a relief pitcher rather than a starter. He has been statistically shown to have the best sinker ball in major leagues, better than Zach Britton. He had the most ground ball double plays last year. They love him. They gave him a shot. And to think he was the closer of the future and they gave him a 2-week shot, I think he'll be back. But if not, of course, they'll make the deal. But here's the thing. I think they can get away in the bullpen when Glover and Kelly come back. I think they'll be okay. My concern, if I'm a Washington fan, is the starting pitching. Scherzer, terrific, Strasburg, Tanner Roark, Gio Gonzalez. But if they get an injury, and, you know, you got Steven Strasburg in there, right? They used Jeremy Guthrie as a fifth starter earlier in the year, and the next day he retired. That's how bad he was. They got nobody. They got A.J. Cole. And they have no depth in their starting pitching. And ultimately, I think they'll be able to get away with the bullpen, and they'll get somebody. But where do you get – I mean, there's plenty of bullpen guys around to get. But where do you get a starting pitcher from? That's going to be the big problem for Washington.
But again, if they stay healthy, this is a team that pretty much will not have a problem winning the National League East. And if they had to deal with the injuries that the Mets dealt with, which brings up another problem, is why are all these injuries with the Mets every year where they were seven deep when the season started as far as starters? You're going into Gesellman, as a safety, and now he's a mandatory on that staff. So it just shows you how much injuries can hurt a starting staff when people thought the Mets were going to have the best starting staff in the league, and they're in shambles right now. So it could happen with Washington if they get one or two injuries that they would have something to worry about. But unless that happens, I think Washington's pretty much going to rule the National League East for this season, because it just seems like the Mets have their handful of issues that they have to deal with before they really can start worrying about chasing somebody who's ahead of them.
Yeah. Now, so you know why I'm laughing? I'm looking at Mats, Wheeler, and Syndergaard. Does that remind you of anything?
Yes.
From the Mets
Generation
past?
K. Yes.
Yeah, where Pulsifer, Wilson, and Isringhausen.
Yeah, I still remember.
You're right.
I still remember the
You're
cover.
Right. It never ends. All right, let's get off the Mets. It's making me ill.
It never ends. Right. Yeah. But anyway.
Never ends.
Let's move to the NL Central, where the Cardinals have jumped ahead of the pack with their six-game winning streak. But I'm still amazed looking at – we're now at May 11th, and the Brewers and the Reds are ahead of the Cubs in a division. I mean, if anybody would have told you that was going to be the case on May 11th, what would you have said?
Well, obviously, that's a tremendous stat. So let's see. The Brewers and the Reds are ahead of the Cubs. Now, would you say that's the strangest stat of this season so far? Because I have one that's better. So you say the Brewers and the Reds ahead of the Cubs. Last year at this time, the Cubs were 26-8. This year they're 17-17. But if you would you take the position that saying that Milwaukee, Cincinnati ahead of the Cubs is the strangest stat of the year so far? And I'll tell you one that's even better.
Well,
ready?
I don't know. Go ahead.
Much better. Much, but no contest. Who has more RBIs? Christian Arroyo or Buster Posey?
Yeah. Wow.
Ah, you won't beat that
there you
one.
Go. No, you're right.
You're right.
Well, it also helps when Buster Posey is being walked to get to Christian Arroyo, who then hits the 3-run double.
That's right. Posey's only hitting, 360 or something like that. But that's crazy.
I know.
Arroyo has 9 RBIs. Posey has 8. I love it. I absolutely love it.
But it just goes to show you how nobody is on base for the Giants, because Posey's having a good year.
Oh, yeah. Posey's doing great. And that makes it even better. And you got this kid, you got Brandon Belt. I mean, unbelievable what they're doing to Brandon Belt. He has struck out 41 times so far this year, on pace for 195, and that's going to top the record. The Giants' record is not Barry Bonds, but Bobby Bonds in 1970. And it's just crazy that Brandon Belt just doesn't he swung at a 3-0 pitch only one time. He doesn't swing at the first pitch at all. He's only put 10 or 11 balls in play on the first pitch strike. It's just crazy. 11 times the season has put the first pitch into play. So it's just crazy. Brandon Belt's getting killed. Batting him second. They want him on base. I think it gets into these guys' heads. Schwarber, the same thing. You put him up first, all of a sudden he's an on-base percentage guy. He's not a slugger anymore. Same thing happened to Belt. Happened to Justin Upton last year when he batted second. It's happening to Castellanos this year when he bats second. Put these guys where they belong in the middle of the order. If they're a slugger, forget about the on-base percentage. Put somebody else in there.
I tell you, one guy who hasn't happened to, and that's Conforto, because he looks pretty good in the leadoff spot, if you ask me. But if you want to talk about – if you want to talk about
– I'm sorry.
If you want to talk
I'm
about
sorry,
strikeouts, I think Joey Gallo is going to set the record for Major League history. I mean, he's already got 54 strikeouts, and we're not – not even to the middle of May.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll hit he'll strike out, he'll hit home runs, he'll strike out, a little home run. But you know what I'm laughing at? It's just crazy. So you talk about Conforto. I mean, we could do a whole show on them. We could do it till tomorrow
right.
morning.
And we could.
We
and,
can
and
go
and
all night.
Eventually what we're eventually always going to come back to the Mets. But, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because they got Cespedes, they got Bruce, they got Granderson, and their best hitters on the bench. And then, you know, with all the pitchers, the Mets, the Wheelers, the you know, Syndergaard, all these guys, maybe except Jake DeGrom. With the exception of Jake DeGrom, where's their best pitcher right now?
Who's Syndergaard?
Trick question, because he's on the Detroit Tigers. It's Michael Fulmer.
Oh, yes. Fulmer. Palmer? Yeah. Fulmer. Yeah. I'm thinking. I said Philip Palmer. Philip Fulmer. Well,
crazy.
Fulmer.
Yeah, Fulmer.
Well, Fulmer they,
but, so that's where their best pitcher is.
But they got Cespedes for him, so they had to do that.
Yes, I know. But still,
yeah,
so it's just irony that they're. But all the guys they hyped up, the best guy is, except for Jake DeGrom, is on Detroit, winning the Rookie of the Year award.
But they still have guys in their minor league system who are going to be okay. You know, Corey Oswalt is having a good year. PJ Collins having a good year at Double A.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Molina hasn't come back yet. They have another guy, a left-hander, Sapowski, I believe. That had really good numbers last year. They have good guys. Jordan Humphrey, I believe, at Single A is putting up a really good year. So they have guys that are going to be ready. The problem with the Mets is they've never really had any good position players. And you know, with Rosario and Domin, the first baseman that they drafted a couple years ago, almost ready.
Smith, right?
They're doing really well at Triple A. But again, you don't hear the Mets talk about bringing them up. I guess because of when they can become free agents or something like that.
Yeah.
If they do it before June 1st. So I could understand that. But, I mean, Rosario's a guy who if he's ready, and he looks like he's ready with the weight, but then again, you can't really tell. To have a team in Las Vegas, to me, is really dumb because
Binghamton. He was in Binghamton last year.
Right, but Rosario's been at Las Vegas this year.
Yeah, and but, I mean, last year I went up to Binghamton and I saw Rosario. And I knew who he was, but, you know, the Mets hadn't come out on the field yet. And then I didn't know what number he was. And there I see a kid, and I turned to Andrew, and I said, whose number or whatever number? And he said, that's true. Oh, wow. He looked like he stood out, definitely a man among boys. He looked totally different than everybody else. And then I take a look, and I say, who's the fat guy? And it's Dominic Smith. Let me tell you something. I don't know about Dominic. I know he's lost a lot of weight. But I'll tell you, when a guy like that, who's in Binghamton, gets so out of shape, you got to wonder about his makeup.
Yeah, but he dealt with a lot of those weight issues this year because when he came to camp, he looked a lot different. And
he's having a very good year.
He's having a very good year so far at Triple A. Mm-hmm. But again, it's hard to judge when you put a team in Las Vegas, because their offensive numbers are going to be inflated, and their pitching numbers are going to be inflated. So why would you do that?
How stupid is that?
I don't understand. You know, for years they had a team in Tidewater. They had it. You know, then they went up to Buffalo, and now they go out to Vegas. They even were in Louisiana and New Orleans for 1 year. So I don't know why. It's just so hard to gauge how a player is really doing, a pitcher or a hitter at AAA. And if you look now, Rosario and Smith have the two most hits, the two highest number of hits in their organization. Rosario's got 46, he's got 43. They're both hitting over three. Rosario's hitting 370 down there. So they got guys that are on their way. It'll be interesting to see how these guys do when they finally get up to Queens. But for the longest time, as you know, Lenny, the Mets' big problem is they've never been able to really have consistent homegrown offensive firepower. And, you know, maybe Rosario will be one of the best that ever was, looking at it, at his numbers and hearing the hype. You know, at 21, it certainly looks like he could be. But that's always been an issue. Going back to Reyes, Wright, whether it was, Strawberry or anybody else that's come through the Mets system, they've never really fully been able to reach their potential. But
absolutely right.
Moving on to the National League. The Rockies leading the West. Do you think that they're for real? I mean, you know they can hit, but again, kind of like being out in Vegas, is their pitching going to hold up? I mean, they have a couple guys, Antonio Sensatella. I mean, a rookie that's really come on the scene so far, done very well this year. They're pitching much better than they had in the past. Do you think that that can stand up, or do you think the Dodgers are eventually going to be the ones to come away with that division?
Well, I think that, you know what? I think they're doing it. Colorado's got the best road ERA in Major League Baseball. They're 11-5 on the road, and their pitchers have posted a 2.8 ERA. I don't know if they played today. 2.8 in the last eight games, and the opposition's been held to under 200. And that's pretty good. And they had a pitcher last night who happened to be the fifth Rockies pitcher in their history to throw a six-inning no-hitter at Coors Field. They've won 22 games. They got a great bullpen. Here's the thing about the bullpen. The team, they're 20-0 when leading after seven games, after seven innings.
After seven innings. So, yeah, well, Greg Holland has a lot to do with that, too.
Absolutely. So the Rockies are doing it. Absolutely doing it. And of course, you got the Cardinals doing it there, too. So in the Central Division.
You mentioned the Rockies on the road. They have the best whip on the road at 1.14. I mean, that's amazing for them. And also, they have the best ERA at 3.23. So, you know, and they're hardly walking anybody, only 49 walks in 16 games. So they're really taking care of what they need to take care of. And if they can get pitching, they're going to be tough because you know they can hit.
And Trevor Story went on the DL today with a bad back. So that's going to be interesting. I thought he might get sent down. It just reaches a point where if the guy continues to strike out and not hit for any kind of average, you know, Greg Jeffries was sent down, and he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Oh, my God. It's not
sorry. I'm sorry.
Do we always got to go back to this? I mean, swinging the bat underwater 100 times from each side of the plate.
Yeah.
That's what I remember.
I used to do that, too. I used to swing a bat in my bathtub, for crying out loud.
Everybody,
my mother used to say, what are you doing? I couldn't swing. Couldn't get a full extension, but I practiced bunting.
Man, everybody
and me, I would
Jeffrey
swing a bat in the shower. And my father said, Lenny, it's not the same.
No, I wouldn't say the shower's the same as the pool. But you never know.
But I didn't know. I was 8 years old. I used to like that stuff.
But you know what's funny, Lenny, is I'm looking at how Dansby Swanson's doing this year. He's really struggling with the Braves. Everyone pretty much gave him the Rookie of the Year award. And to me, that was a lot like Jeffries back in 89. You know, Jeffries had a great postseason in 88. I believe he hit over 330 when he came up to the Mets for September of 88. He did very well in the postseason. Everybody dialed him in. This guy's going to be Rookie of the Year in 1989. And then half the Mets couldn't stand him. I mean, his whole teammates hated him. And, you know, I believe he only hit 258 that year. And one of the biggest disappointments in Met history as far as a prospect. So I think if you look at the Braves, who have really struggled, and they played so well the second half of the year with Swanson and Kemp and a couple of the other guys that they got started really to produce. I think that's a big reason why they haven't played well yet this year. It's because Swanson is struggling with a little bit of that, sophomore jinx, even though he's still a rookie. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely so. And Swanson, you know, in fantasy baseball, people always ask me about it. I say, stay away. He's a much better baseball player, which he's not this year, but he's mainly a defensive player and a hitter, an average hitter. The counting categories, the home runs, stolen bases. He's just a very complimentary player. But here's why you won't see Swanson batting second anymore. Freddie Freeman has hit 9 of his 12 home runs with the bases empty.
I know.
And that's because, you know, over 200 major league players have more plate appearances with runners in scoring position than Freddie Freeman.
Wow.
Is that unbelievable? And that's the function of the number two guy. And they're the number two batter, whoever it was, and it's been Swanson most of the year. On base percentage is under 220.
He's only hitting 160. He is really struggling. But you look at Freeman, 12 home runs, 20 RBIs. I mean, this guy's Curtis Granderson, basically.
Oh, Freddie Freeman is right there, but you know he's still putting up the numbers. But there's nobody on base. And the on-base percentage of all the hitters have just been terrible ahead of him. So even Enciarte has more RBIs than Freddie Freeman. It's just a question of nobody's getting on base in the number two hole.
Yeah, well, Enciarte's got 15 RBIs. Freeman's got 20. But I get your point.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, for nobody's
right.
on base.
Yeah.
Nobody's on base. And mm-hmm. Freeman is a heck of a player. I mean, he's a guy that really has come into his own. I remember last year talking to somebody about Freddie Freeman and Lucas Duda. And mm-hmm. and at one point they were almost similar, and look at how their careers have done. I mean, Lucas Duda has become he's never healthy, and he never is able to consistently stay on the field. And when he does produce, he'll have a great week, and then he won't hit for a month. So the consistency also matters. But yeah, I agree. I mean, Freeman's one of the guys that really has started to come into his own for Atlanta. But again, you know, when I looked at the way Swanson was hitting this year, a lot of people had given him the Rookie of the Year award, and it just reminded me of what Jeffries went through in the '89 season. But
absolutely. And by the way, Enciarte, no, you're right. I was wrong about that. But Enciarte's been on base, has been at bat with more plate appearances with runners in scoring position, batting leadoff, more runners in scoring position than Freddie Freeman. So that tells you how bad Swanson's been.
Yeah, exactly. And now looking at the American League, you have Baltimore and the Yankees. I sent you a stat earlier about every time the Yankees have won 20 of their first 30 games, 15 of those 18 times they've gone on to win the World Series. And it looks like no one really anticipated the Yankees being this good because of the – I mean, they're going to have a great bullpen. With Chapman and Betances and those guys at the end of the game. But their starters have really done well. Severino and Matsuzaka, Tanaka.
All
those,
Tanaka.
I'm thinking about Matsuzaka. I'm thinking, again, bad Mets signings.
Yeah.
Tanaka, I mean, and even Sabathia started to struggle a little bit, but he did well in the first couple starts. Do you think the Yankees have the consistency for the season to compete with Baltimore and Boston? And do you even see Toronto kind of getting back into the mix in the American League East?
Well, you're asking a guy who predicted that the Yankees would be place in the American League East. Absolutely predicted that. Now, let's face it, I could be wrong, okay? But not nearly as bad as I expected them to be. But just keep in mind, I mean, the pitching staff really is very fragile. And if Severino doesn't continue to pitch well, the Yankees are going to be in trouble. And Aaron Judge, you know, he's been tremendous. He's been tremendous. There's no question about it. But he's 4 for his last 16 now. And let's see how he bounces back. You know, I don't know if you remember a player named Billy Ashley. He used to play in the early 1990s with the Angels and a couple other teams.
Yeah.
6'7", 240. He had 7 stupid years in the majors, and he was – a lot of the scouts I've talked to compare Aaron Judge to Billy Ashley. A lot of them also compared Greg Bird to Justin Smoke, and that seems to be more of a realistic than most people. But still, look, the Yankees, they've done – here's the thing that's exciting me about the Yankees – is their record against some of the good teams? I think they're 12-4 against teams with better than a 500 record. 12-4 mm-hmm. with teams over 500.
Yeah,
so,
including sweeping the Cubs,
beating everybody, including the good teams.
Yeah, including sweeping the Cubs at Wrigley. You know, highlighted by an 18 inning Sunday night game that nobody ever thought was going to end, but. Mm-hmm. A couple more numbers on the Yankees. They're 20-6 since they started 1-4. They've scored 51 runs in their last 7 games. They lead the AL, averaging 5.8 runs per game, and with a .463 slugging percentage. And if you're talking about Aaron Judge, only 2 players have had more home runs in the first 30 games in Yankee history, and that's Mickey Mantle in 1956, who had 15. And Alex Rodriguez, who had 14 in 2007. By the way, both of those players won the MVP in each of those years. So Judge is in some pretty heavy category with the numbers he put up so far this year. And, you know, no one thought that the Yankees had the consistency to put up with an offense like the Red Sox. So do you think the Red Sox will ultimately come back and win this division since they pretty much have the best offense in the division? Or do you think that Baltimore, who no one really threw in there at the beginning of the year, even though Baltimore has been played well the last couple of years and consistently been one of the better teams in that division, do you see Red Sox coming back to the top, or is Baltimore for real as well as the Yankees?
Well, you know what? At the beginning of the year, I didn't like Baltimore because of their pitching, but I love the way Dylan Bundy has pitched. Wade Miley has pitched much better than we expected him to. Wade Miley coming into, I don't know if he pitched yesterday, allowed 52 runners to reach base on hits, walks, or hits batsmen, and only 10 of them have scored. But, you know, so he's doing well. But here's the thing about the Orioles. This is about their offense. They've scored 35 runs in the first inning. So you take a pitcher and give him a lead right off the bat, as the Orioles have done in so many games, and that's a formula for winning ball games and helping your pitcher out a lot. And even Kevin Gausman, who I went on a serious show as a guest, and here's what they did to me. They asked me for a bold prediction. So you know what a bold prediction is? It's a bold prediction. It's not that Bryce Harper's going to be good, right? So I said Kevin Gausman's going to win the Cy Young Award in the American League. Next thing I knew, my Twitter thing like exploded. What are you, an idiot? But it was a bold prediction. So still, I like Kevin Gausman, and that was a bold prediction that I thought, you know, could happen if everything went right. He's pitched awful, but if he pitches like he did in his last outing, and Dylan Bundy, who brought back his slider, he purposely shut it down last year because of worries about his arm. And he brought, that was his best pitch. Slider's a tough pitch. Chris Tillman has come back. I don't know what he's got. Of course, the Zach Britton thing is a killer. But I kind of have a feeling about the Reds, about the Orioles. And as far as the Red Sox go, look, last year at this time, do you remember who the guy was who carried the Red Sox? It was Jackie Bradley, and he has done absolutely nothing. He carried that team in the first month. I really think it's been downplayed what David Ortiz means to this ball club in the batting order. And I'm just not convinced that the Red Sox are going to be the team. Right now, if you ask me to go out on that limb, I think it's going to be the Orioles. Toronto, I think they've won 6 out of their last 10, but I don't see their team at all. It's a weak division. I predicted that Tampa would be the team to win this division based upon their pitching with Archer and Cobb and Odorizzi. But Blake Snell has been a huge disappointment, absolutely. And the offense, you know, the offense is what it is. They got a bunch of guys who just strike out a ton and hit home runs. But I would say that Baltimore, I think the Orioles are the team that I'm looking forward to, and I do think that the Yankees are just not going to keep that up. I don't have a lot of confidence in their pitching. I think CC, we've seen the best of him. I think Pineda and Tanaka, they could still be good, but Severino's the guy I'm worried about. Jordan Montgomery's nice, but they need another pitcher, and if they don't get it from Severino, the Yankees are going to be in trouble. But they do have the ability to go ahead and get somebody because you know the minor leagues system is stacked. So it just depends on how much the Yankees want it, because they could make a trade. They can get it maybe a Johnny Cueto, for goodness gracious, if the Giants decide to rebuild. I mean, they can get a pitcher. So, you know what? It all depends on what the Yankees want to do. I think they could do it if they want. And it sounds funny, right? But I'm not sure if the Yankees really care about winning this year.
Wow. I think you can say that. But if we get to July 31st and it looks like they have a shot at winning this division, I think that they'll make the moves that they really need to make.
Yeah,
I mean, don't you?
Well, I agree with you. That's what should happen, right? That's what should happen.
It would be very hard for me to imagine that not happening.
I know. I agree with you. But they kind of disappointed me with their relative lack of inactivity in the offseason.
Well, I mean, they believed in a lot of these younger guys, and I think it's starting to show.
Yep.
I mean, you know, that it's paying off. But you mentioned about first inning runs and about, you know, who scores them. The Devil Rays, or the, me going back, the Rays now, they lead baseball with 31 runs scored in the first inning. So they've been able to do that. They've been able to get their pitchers leads. But, you know, at 17 and 19, they've been disappointed by some of the pitchers you said, and they haven't been able to carry some of those into the later innings. So they've surprised me offensively, Tampa Bay. They've been better than I thought they would be. And them jumping out in the first inning is a big reason why. But moving now to the AL Central, okay, you got four teams within two games of each other. Who's coming out of that mess?
Well, of course, in the AL Central, you got, you know, of course, you can't discount Cleveland. But Salazar, boy, he looked, he had a 7-3 lead in the third inning, and he couldn't hold on to the lead. You got to wonder about Salazar. Kipnis is still batting .175. I think he'll get better than that. I mean, I just don't think it's a given. And I do think that the Detroit Tigers are going to get J.D. Martinez back. The Tigers, Justin Wilson, we've all heard, is going to be the closer until they get K-Rod straightened out. That means Wilson's got the job for the whole year. But it's going to be a crapshoot, and I don't think that the White Sox ever expected the team to be in such a decent condition. But could you imagine if the White Sox had Chris Sale and if Carlos Rodon comes back to be anything of what we expect him to be? Boy, the White Sox would be a tough team. But they don't have Chris Sale, and they don't have Rodon. They have a lot of chips. That's the thing. That's going to be the interesting thing. And we had a beat writer on from Chicago on Sunday. And everybody's perplexed because the question now becomes, if the White Sox remain competitive, and they could, what are they going to do with all their trade chips? And they got quite a few of them. It's not just Quintana. It's they got Todd Frazier. They got Miguel Gonzalez. They got Derek Holland. They got Miguel Gonzalez. Yep. They got, of course, Robertson. So Robertson. It's going to be interesting to see if they're close. Are they going to unload these guys? We all know that they want to. We think we know that they want to. But what do you do when your team is close and it's Chicago? You know, you just can't throw in the white flag when you got a chance to get the wild card spot.
Now, you look at Minnesota, okay, a team that lost 100 games last year. One of the biggest surprises this year has been Ervin Santana. Only 21 hits given up in over 47 innings.
Right.
I mean, this guy has been absolutely lights out. Do you think they have the ability to stay in this race?
No. And first of all, but I don't think Ervin Santana was a surprise, maybe to this degree. But if you take a look at the record coming into the year between Ervin Santana and the great Quintana from Chicago, whose name was bantered around every day as a trade chip, Quintana's better, by not by much. Take a look at the last 3 years. You'll see Quintana is slightly better than Ervin Santana, and they could fetch a bundle for Santana. So based upon that, I really believe that, and I heard Thad Levine on the radio this weekend, and he was very candid, and he said, look, we have a plan, and that is to rebuild, and that's what we're going to do. So not a lot of confidence in this Minnesota team, really challenging. You got to wonder about Byron Buxton, although he's coming on now. He's batting about .190, something like that. Brian Dozier's out now with the bad ankle. Sano, I think Santana's going to go. And let me tell you something. There's going to be every contending team going after Ervin Santana. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and Santana has done it before. So you know that he's capable of putting up big numbers. Hector Santiago quietly has had a very good year for them. There's another guy that maybe they can get stuff back for if they want to give him up. And then you look offensively, you're right. Dozier's been a guy who, for you know, his career has really produced, really is struggling so far this year. But what about a guy like Joe Mauer? What do you think that they could get for him at the trade deadline?
Oh, nothing. Nothing. All right, I'm going to say something, but you have to promise not to hit me.
Go ahead. I don't know how I could do it now anyway, Lenny, but go ahead.
No, do you promise? Promise you're not going to get mad at me?
Yeah, I promise.
Now,
buddy.
All right, here's the thing. This kid, Barrios, was supposed to get called up on Saturday, and it's not happening. Everybody's waiting for this guy's minor league numbers are great, but he looks mentally overmatched in the major leagues. So you know who's starting? Adam Wilk. And what happens if here we go, back to the Mets again. What happens if Adam Wilk has a good start and becomes a good starter for Minnesota? I'll shoot myself. It's crazy. He's the guy who came in, filled in a 20-minute notice with Matt Harvey. Yeah, Adam Wilk. You know, the Mets have released him. Minnesota picked him up. He's the lefty.
I know.
I think 29, 30 years old, something like that. And
right.
he's pitching on Saturday. So look out. If he has a good game, that's when. By the way, all you Met fans who want to jump off the bridge, just, you know, as you go through the toll booth, don't pay it. Say, Lenny's got it for me, okay? And we'll all jump off together.
Well,
you don't
have
to pay the toll.
It's funny because Barrios has done pretty good in the minor league so far. I mean, he's had a very good year at AAA, so I don't know why. I mean, Wilk certainly wasn't going to do anything. Looked at how he pitched the other day against the Marlins. So they must be really not wanting to throw this guy to the Wolves. There must be something mentally that he's just incapable of handling for them to sign Adam Wilk.
Well,
I just don't understand.
They just want Barrios or Barrios or Cheerios, whatever his name is, more time to develop. He's thrown, about 230 innings over the last 4 years. He's gone 19-8 with a 2.5 ERA. He's got an ERA of 1.1 in the AAA this year through six starts, and they just want to make sure. But it's, you know, the thing is that and this happens, is that you get so intimidated that you can't play your game, and he gets called up to the majors, and you know it's like getting the yips, you know, when these pitchers or catcher when a catcher can't throw back to the pitcher, or when John Lester can't throw to first base. It's very possible that these guys perform so well in the minors, and then when they hit the majors, they get the yips in a different fashion, in a different way. So I don't know, but it makes no sense to me while he's not up, other than the fact that mentally he's just overmatched.
Yeah, former first-round pick in 2012. Only 8 walks so far in the minors this year, and 39 is innings pitched. So he's done the job in the minor leagues. Now, looking at the American League West, the Astros look like the Nationals of the American League, where they're just about ready to run away with this thing. You looked at how Dallas Keuchel has done so far this year after a down year last year after winning the Cy Young and looking so dominant in 2015. They start a huge series against the Yankees tonight. Do you think the Astros are the best team in that division and they will just clearly run away with it, or are the Angels and the Mariners and even maybe the Rangers, who have really struggled so far this year, do you think that there's still something left in the tank for them?
Well, at the beginning of the season, I would have thought it would be the Mariners, but then take a look. Felix Hernandez is down. Paxton is down. Smiley is down. We're talking about the Mets, the plight of the Mets. You got four pretty good starting pitchers all on the DL for the Mariners. And they, you know, led by Giovanni Gallardo and Dylan Overton right now. But so I think if they hang in there and they get these pitchers back, I understand Paxton's pretty much ready to start coming back. Iwakuma out with a bad knee, but that, you know, it's not his arm, so he could come back. Felix is starting to throw. Drew Smiley, I don't know what his status is. So they could still do it. And, of course, they got the good bullpen. And here's the thing about the Astros. You know, I mentioned before the Yankees are 12-4 against teams over 500. The Astros are 1-2 against teams over 500. They've only played 3 games against teams that were 500 when they played them, and they're 1-2. So I don't think they've been tested yet. So I don't think we know. The only thing about the Astros that we do know is that they've been doing pretty good without their best player, Carlos Correa, who all of a sudden now is starting to really come on. I mean, Correa was hitting 230-something in the month of April, and then all of a sudden this month he's batting over 340 with 7 RBIs in just 9 games. So Correa's coming on. Bregman, who has, you know, the only player on the team who hasn't hit a home run is Alex Bregman. But guess who leads? He hasn't hit a home run. But you know who leads the American League with the highest batting average of runners in scoring position? It's Alex Bregman. So he's hitting in
really?
The clutch. He's doing good. And but the Astros are having. I mean, they're just doing it. Yeah, Bregman's hitting .444 with runners in scoring position, tied for the best in the American League. So I think the Astros will be there. And the thing with isn't Keuchel pitching tonight? That's going to be
yes. Keuchel's pitching tonight. Yes.
I've noticed one thing about the pitching guys, the guys who are doing good, with all the pitchers throwing 180 miles an hour, those aren't the guys that are dominating. It's the guys that have the changeup. And the best pitch in the arsenal of Dallas Keuchel 2 years ago was the changeup and getting the ground balls. His ground ball rate this year is better than it was in his Cy Young Award season. Last year, he just didn't have the change. He couldn't get it going, couldn't keep the batters off balance. This year, he's doing it. I think Dallas Keuchel, and there's no reason. You know, my friend Craig Mish, my co-host on Sirius, interviewed Keuchel, and Dallas Keuchel said, I'm going to be the steal of the draft. And I think, you know what, in fantasy baseball, he may be the pitching steal of the draft. So, yep, no question about it that the Astros are going to be right there before I make a commitment on them. And I think it's a pretty easy process of elimination. I think the Mariners are the only team that can compete. I really don't like Texas. I just don't. But certainly Seattle, when they get their pitchers back, if they can hang in, I think they can give the Astros a tug. Otherwise, the Astros could very well run away with it.
You mentioned the Mariners and their injuries. Iwakama has inflammation in his shoulder. He's on the 10-day disabled list.
Oh, that is smiling. He's got a little bit of both then.
Yeah, and Drew Smyly has just been transferred to the 60-day disabled list with a flexor strain.
Yeah.
And expected to be out 6 to 8 weeks. Paxton has been placed on a 10-day disabled list, but he should be back by the end of May. And Hernandez is expected to miss 3 to 4 weeks. So those are, you know, some pretty big injuries for the Mariners to overcome. But if you look at what the Mariners have done going back the last 5 to 10 years, is every year they make off-season moves like Cano and some of these other guys, bringing in Nelson Cruz to be the guy to get them over the hump, and they never seem to get there. And I think every year people say, okay, Seattle's made enough moves, even back when they brought in Adrian Beltre back in the day. They've finally gotten to, okay, now they're going to contend and really take over the American League West, and something always happens to where they don't have the year that they're expected to have. And I think this is just the latest example of that, because when you're talking about Houston, there's no doubt, and you mentioned Bregman. Bregman's got 12 for 28 with runners in scoring position, but he only has 8 RBIs. So it's not like he's driving in runs. You know, he's getting hits with runners in scoring position, but if you have 12 hits and only 8 RBIs when you have runners in scoring position, there's something a little bit wrong with that. So I think he's, being able to get the hits is one thing, but you want guys to be able to score when you hit, get hits as well. So I think that the Astros with Keuchel, they have the best pitcher in the American League right now, minus Chris Sale, I guess, with the way Sale has been striking out people. And also tonight, Keuchel against the Yankees has really dominated the Yankees in his career. He's has a 1.63 ERA on 5 career starts against them. And if you remember, he also started the 2015 AL wildcard game where he pretty much dominated the Yankees.
No question about it. Texas is the wild card there. I don't know what to expect out of the Rangers. They just shook up their lineup. If they regroup, they got a shot with Yu Darvish. I think, isn't it funny how they're working with Yu Darvish? He hasn't signed an extension or agreed to an extension.
Yeah.
So this guy's going to throw about 400 innings this year.
Wow.
Keep him
that?
Out there, you. But as soon as he signs or indicates he's going to sign, he's only going to start going 7 innings. They're going to protect him. That's what they did to Chapman in Chicago. Remember last year when they knew that they weren't going to sign him? He just pitched him every day. That was it.
That's right.
Who cares?
Including game 7.
For next year. Yeah.
Now, Now, here, I'm going to throw some names at you. You tell me who the biggest surprise player is of all these guys, okay? Here's some names for you. Mark Reynolds, Ryan Zimmerman, Eric Thames. Who's been the biggest surprise of those three guys?
Well, it's not Reynolds, because we've seen him do something like this before.
Yeah,
in
parts, though, Lenny. I mean, he strikes out a lot.
Yeah, I know, but still, it's
336.
You
know, he's never done that before.
No, but you can't surprise me when you see Mark Reynolds hitting home runs in Colorado. I mean, it's a surprise. Eric Thames, I had no idea what to expect, and quite frankly, I was not on his bandwagon, not at all. To me, was he 32 years old, hadn't played in the United States in Major League Baseball, to expect anybody to come from Korea and at the age that he's at and have that success is a shocker. And then, of course, Ryan Zimmerman. And the thing about Zimmerman is, and I'm using fantasy baseball as a little bit of a guideline here to show that he's the biggest surprise, because even though he has been arguably the best hitter in the National League, in the fantasy baseball community, you can't even trade him for a fair value. People just don't trust him. And he went 0-for-5 the other night, striking out twice, grounding into a double play. He had a 13-game hitting streak coming into the series. But he went hitless on Monday in the opener, and now is 1-for-14 with 2 strikeouts and a double play. So I just mentioned before, Aaron Judge, who's suffering a little mini slump. I think the run for Ryan Zimmerman is over. Look, we all have these hot streaks during the course of the year. Every player does. But when it's at the beginning of the year, it really jumps off the page, unlike if he put this streak together during the course of July and August or, June and July. So if I'm playing fantasy baseball, I'm trying desperately to get rid of Ryan Zimmerman. But I'll say Zimmerman. And I don't know, Zimmerman and Thames are the big surprises. Reynolds, no question, is a surprise. But if you told me that Mark Reynolds was going to hit 35 home runs in Colorado, I could see it happening. Not the batting average, but the home runs. But still, Zimmerman and Thames, I'll say Eric Thames was the biggest surprise for me.
All right, we got 2 minutes left here, Lenny. So real quick, as far as pitching, biggest surprise, I'll throw out a couple names. Andrew Triggs, Jason Vargas, A.J. Griffin. Who's been the bigger surprise of those three guys?
Oh, I got to say, normally I would say Triggs, because at the beginning of the year I would have said who? All right, so he was unknown. So the fact that he was slightly unknown, I'll give him a pass. A.J. Griffin has shown glimpses in his career, but Jason Vargas has never been any good. And he pitched a great game today, if I'm not mistaken. I could
he
be
did.
Wrong.
Yep.
No, he went 7 innings
game.
Today.
Yeah, shut out.
Seven
shut
innings.
Out, yep.
Are you kidding me? I mean, yep. Triggs and Griffith, okay, but they haven't been bad. They haven't been well-known bad pitchers. Jason Vargas was a well-known clinker, and now he's among the best pitchers in the American League. So.
0.92. He has a 0.92 whip after today.
Yep.
5 wins. The Royal has been their best pitcher by far so far this year. So I to me, he's a guy. Talk about the Mets. He had two starts with the Mets a while back.
Stop it. Yeah. That's right.
So,
you're right.
There you go.
I forgot about
so,
that.
Just to keep this up. But Lenny, I can't thank you enough for coming on. It's been a great talking to you for this hour. For those of you who are looking for Lenny, you can find him at Lenny Melnick, fantasysports.com. He hosts a fantasy sports show on Sunday at 7 to 10 a.m. on Sirius XM Radio and Sirius 210 XM 87. Lenny, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully we can do this again real soon.
Anytime. And the podcast on the website, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Join us in the chat room. It's a hoot. So thank you very much, Mark.
God bless, Lenny, and we will talk to you soon. That is all the time we have for today and for our inaugural broadcast of MLB 17 Power Hour. My name is Mark Kelly. It's been a joy to be with you tonight. As we look at the matchups for tonight, keep an eye on Baltimore and Washington. Got Dylan Bundy going for Baltimore against the Nationals tonight. With his 5 wins, he's been one of the best pitchers in the American League, along with Keitel going against the Yankees as well. We will see you next week.